For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. And yes, I'm Tim Fuel, and we're back with another weekly look at the world of non-league. It is the FA Cup first qualifying round this weekend, and the Step 3 sides come in across the pyramid, making it the big focus across non-league this weekend. As ever, we turn to Mr. Philonex to tune us in and set the scene with all the stats and facts of the round. One club taking part are a Midlands outfit chosen for the BBC Red Button live game this weekend, but as the visitors. Not that they have to travel far, because walking to the opposition's ground is probably the option for most of their fans this week. It is so close. Chairman at Darlington Town, Neil Chambers, tells us about their history, their successes and their aspirations. Rounding it all up with thoughts and some of the biggest stories in this week's non-league scene is editor-at-large at the non-league paper, Mr. Matt Batcock, along with his preview of this weekend's issue of the paper. So sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So our late return this season means even we have missed two rounds of the FA Cup. The extra preliminary and the preliminary round have been done and dusted, and we come to the first qualifying round this weekend. In our absence, of course, one man has been keeping a very close eye on the competition and how it's all been unravelling. I'm pleased to say he joins us now, so it is another warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show, to FA Cup Fact File, Mr. Philonex. Welcome back to the show, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Always good to be back.
Well, it's always pleasing to have you on the first qualifying round. And we see, 88 Step 3 clubs entering the competition. Plenty of Step 4, Step 5 representatives left. And I think one of those original seven from Step 6 that entered this year too.
We do, yes. Still going after two wins already. Oakhampton Argyle from the South West Peninsula League. Representing the South West very well. They've won through two games, and they are the last Step 6 side standing. So it's great news for them, and they're having a fantastic experience in their first run in the competition. I think they are one of three debut clubs as well who are still going, so they're in the first campaigns. We've got Rugby Borough and Lydd Town, who were the last team to get through early on this week.
It's great. So, even though we're the third round into the competition, there's still records being broken. More records, I'm sure, will be broken across the weekend. Some extending their success, others maybe trying to get some monkeys off their back. Any of particular note that you think will be hoping to get past these records of the past? I remember from your review from the last round, Horndean, they're a club fairly local to me. They've got their sights set on the second qualifying round, shall we say.
They do. They've had many opportunities in the past to get themselves into the second qualifying round. I think they've fallen over about 11 or 12 times at this stage without going any further. I think there's only one other club in the history of the competition that's had more attempts to getting into the second qualifying round without actually doing so. But this could be their weekend. Maybe this is the one that gets them into the second qualifying round for the first time.
Well, Horndean fans, you heard it here first. There's plenty of all Step 5 ties as well, which is always good because it guarantees there's a side from that level are going to be in the second qualifying round. Yeah, one that stood out for me, Tacos at Albion against Heaton Stannington. Heaton Stannington, of course, one of those clubs that beat a Step 4 side in the last round.
Yes, and a club that's had to wait a long, long time to get a chance to get into the second qualifying round again. So I think it's about 40 years or more since they got further than this round. They haven't entered the competition that often in that time or haven't been eligible. So there should be a lot of excitement up there in the North East for this season. But you're right, I think there's seven ties which guarantee a club below Step 4 will be in the second qualifying round, because obviously Oakhampton, Argyle are playing a Step 5 side. And there's also seven ties that involve Step 4 clubs where both those teams began in the extra preliminary round. So there's going to be 14 clubs minimum in the next round who have already played three games by the second qualifying round.
Fantastic. And the prize money's not not dramatic, but it's it certainly helps for clubs at this level of the game, and you know, those sort of wins. I'm sure, again, they're the sort of budgets that have already been spent a million times within the club, because they all know that. But it's a great sign of the strength across the competition, isn't it? That you know, clubs are able to progress, you know, across. Well, as you say, there'll be some clubs that would have won three ties already, and hopefully when we get to the time when the rest of the world suddenly switches on to the fact that the FA Cup has already started, there'll still be one or two of those left in it as well.
Well, it isn't common for clubs to go all the way from the extra premium round to the first round, but it does happen. I think Skelmersdale were the last club to do it a few years ago, but there's every chance, you know, with clubs from level step four starting that early. Obviously, I mean, it was slightly a higher standard than the step five clubs, perhaps, and maybe they've got more of a chance of working their way through. And you know, six rounds they have to get through, which is a lot, obviously. But if they do it, the money does accumulate quite well if you can get through that many rounds.
Yeah, and goal scoring is always a way of to get recognised in the FA Cup. We had quite a few hat tricks. I think we had a number of four goal hauls as well, didn't we, for different players last round. Kettering Town, though, away to Holbridge Sports, they're going to be hoping to net, well, at least a couple, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're in a ding dong battle with Tottenham Hotspur to be the overall top scoring club in FA Cup history, and they sit just one goal behind the Premier League side. And you know, they would have been disappointed last year to have been relegated, but for me, that gives them one extra chance to score more FA Cup goals. So, you know, there's every opportunity this weekend. But if they score a couple, they'll be back on top of the chart again.
And as a dedicated Spurs fan as well, there's every opportunity, if they score a couple, that'll probably keep them on top next season as well. But goals are a great way of creating headlines for clubs. But there's also, we love the chance for revenge as well. That's always a good thing in cup competitions. Worksop Town, they've got to fancy their chances against Sheffield, I would have thought.
Well, they are a higher league side at the moment. It's actually quite a close rivalry between the two clubs. In terms of FA Cup, they've met three times before in the past, but not since 1959. And Worksop have won on every one of the three previous occasions. All the stats suggest that they should carry on this season. But the interesting thing for me on this tie is if their formation dates are to be believed, then there between them there's 328 years of football history.
Wow.
Taking part in one game. So Sheffield 1857, being recognised as the oldest club in the world, and then Worksop claim an 1861 foundation date, although that is disputed by others and whether or not it's as early as that or not, but it's on their badge. So let's take it as a date. There you go, 328 years of football between them.
And that's a lot of records to go through, isn't it? Check up on that. The FA Cup, obviously, regional draws at this stage of the competition is always a chance to renew old acquaintances, like you've got Worksop and Sheffield. Chatham Town and Ramsgate, another one that sprung out at me.
Yeah, actually, that's the most common tie of the round in a sense of having met each other in the competition in the past. So Chatham Town, actually, now the higher of the two sides in terms of league position, but it's Ramsgate who've got the better head-to-head record in the past in the competition, having won four of their five previous encounters.
And Derby's always great anyway. This time as well, that the one that jumps out, the Auckland Derby.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the North East as well as I should. I'm not sure if it's one town or two towns or their neighbours. But yeah, it's an interesting time. And West Auckland Town are one of six clubs who are participating in the FA Cup for the 100th time this season in this first qualifying round. And they're taking on Bishop Auckland, who are actually celebrating their 125th time taking part in the competition this year. So Yeah, it's quite a while since they met back in 1977, 78. They met before in a competition one other time. Bishop Auckland won 3-0 on that occasion, at the same stage of the competition, actually. Well, I think back then, first qualifying round was the actually first round of the competition. So, yeah, it's quite a long time for them to try to avenge that defeat, but it should be a highly interesting game for those up in the northeast.
It just shows the depth, doesn't it? It shows the history of the competition, which anybody that read your book, FA Cup 150, would know anyway. But it's amazing, really, how magical the FA Cup competition is. And of course, you know, our preview of the FA Cup round wouldn't be the same without some sort of wordplay. And every week, you're on with us. You give us some, I'd say, OMG stats. And this week, I think, is it the O stat that stood out for me? Mask United.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the quirky stats I like to dig out when I can. But yes, Mask United are travelling to Osset United in the FA Cup. It's their 75th FA Cup match in their history, and it will be the first time they've faced a club beginning with the letter O.
OMG.
It's obviously not the most common letter. Yeah, OMG. It's obviously not the most common letter of club names, but still, it's quite interesting that they've had so many and never encountered one before.
Indeed. And a very exciting weekend again, Phil. We've got, 224 teams, FA Cup matches, there's two on Friday, there's a majority on Saturday, four on Sunday. Where does this find you in the country watching some football this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to travel to the northwest actually to go and watch Prescott Cables take on North Ferby. So it should be quite an interesting game. Ferby obviously got promoted last year, and they're both at the same level in the pyramid, but they're from opposite sides of the Northern Premier League. So I always quite enjoy watching two clubs at the same level in the same league structure, and to gauge, you know, which is the side that's going to be the more dominant over the season, perhaps, and the game may turn with that.
And a new ground for you to tick off?
It would be a new place. I've not been to Prescott before. I always enjoy going to new locations and seeing all the different clubs and how they operate.
Yeah, we've covered plenty, but any other big stats or facts we should know about before the weekend gets underway?
Well, there are quite a few clubs who are involved in ties where the winner will guarantee history for the club, either by setting their best run or by equaling the run they've had in the past. The game that stands out for me, and I know this is a contentious one, is Widnes taking on Emly, with the winner, from my view, will be in the second qualifying round for the first time, although Emly have got some statement from the FA to say that they can accept the history of the club that was formed previously. And obviously they say that they've been to the third round proper of the competition in the past. As we all know, they took on West Ham in that year. So it's a contentious one, but for me, that the new club, it will be the furthest they've gone since they sort of reformed in 2004.
Football wouldn't be football without contentious issues, would it? VAR, what's that solved? Right, so, no, that's a whole new podcast, that one, separate one. Phil, you know, fantastic stats as ever. Just remind everybody where they can follow you, find out more stats and find out more facts, and, you know, keep an eye on Saturday as it unfolds, or the weekend as it unfolds.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter or X, whatever it's now called, at FA Cup Fact File. You'll find there already there's stats and facts for the majority of the ties that happened this weekend. I think I've got about 75 to 80% of them covered. So have a look through that very long thread to see if your club's there and see if there's anything interesting to you about what's happening this weekend.
Phil Annetts, thank you as ever at FA Cup Fact File. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks so much.
So let's chat then to one of those sides in FA Cup action. In fact, one of those from Step 5, hoping to upset a side from the level above. In fact, it's quite a juicy local derby. So it's also that one that's been chosen by the BBC on the red button and the various platforms that they'll broadcast that on. It's a great showcase, but that always causes plenty of running around for the home side. So the away chairman is probably a little thankful of being out of that for a little bit of the build-up anyway. Let's find out as we welcome chair at Darlison Town to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Neil Chambers. Welcome, Neil.
Thank you, Tim, and you're absolutely right. It'll be a pleasure just to have a nice, lazy morning tomorrow and watch all of the game for a change. Very few home chairmen, I'm sure, watch the entire game.
I was going to ask that. You know, we'll come on to how you've got involved with the club and how long you've been involved with the club, but are you one of those chairmen that a Saturday morning doesn't exist anymore?
I'm afraid I am, yes. I usually get to the ground around 9.30 and my partner and I make the clubs or help to make the clubs with some of the volunteers. And then it's making sure the dressing rooms are clear and everyone else, everything else is done. You know, the pitch is spick and span. There are no cigarette ends in front of the clubhouse. All the usual bits and pieces the chairman does. So, I'm there from around 9.30 and I usually get home about 8 o'clock. So, no different to most club chairmen at this level, I would think.
Indeed. But you're not the host club on Saturday, but in any event, it's a massive game for the club. You've come so far in just a handful of years, haven't you? For those that don't know, the club originally, I think, was formed in 1874. And really, you were one of the original non-league clubs, weren't you? You were sort of a proper community non-league club. The club folded in 2013 with the current Phoenix Club up and running a year after lots of fundraising, social media stuff at the time. You can, of course, correct me on all of those points, though, can't you? Because I think you wrote the club's history before the club originally folded.
That's absolutely right. Formed in 1874, and we were referred to as the second oldest club in the country, but that's wrong by some distance. But we've been going for quite some time, played most of our early football in the Birmingham Leagues. And we were founder members of the West Midland Regional League Premier Division in 1962-3. The West Midland Regional League lost its Step 6 status as part of the FA reorganisation. So we moved into the Midland Football League in 2021-22, I think it was. So we were in the West Midland Regional League for the best part of 50 years. Wow. And we played at an infamous ground called the City Ground, which had a slope to die for. And unbelievably, sort of 8.5, 9 years after the original club folded, the council had just started work on flattening the pitch and creating a forest walk. But that's for others to comment upon.
And that original club as well. I remember seeing when you helped get this Phoenix Club off the ground that you're now chairman of. But am I right? The club had something like 5 FA Cup winners, a few internationals, and an English captain that had come through the ranks.
That's absolutely right. I mean, these are many, many, many years ago. We've had 6 FA Cup winners, an FA Cup winning captain. We had a player who scored the winning goal in the 1912-13 cup final, I think it was. So, you know, in 140, nearly 150 years next year, quite a few players have crossed our path. And, for a little small black country town that until last season had played all its football at Step 6 and below, to have such a number of quite infamous players, really. You're right, we had an England captain, Billy Walker. He played for us as a 17, 18-year-old, and he went on to manage 2 FA Cup winning teams, Sheffield Wednesday and Notts Forest. And indeed, it was at Notts Forest, the captain of Notts Forest. This is back in 1959-60. Was a guy named Jack Burkitt, played 500 times for Forest, and he played for Darlaston as a 17, 18-year-old and signed for Forest from us just after the war in 1948. So, we've been around the block a bit. had plenty of friends and one or two enemies, no doubt, but an unbelievable history for such a small club. And, you know, we're very, very proud of that. In fact, it wasn't until I started researching the book that anyone knew much about the history, to be honest, and certainly not six FA Cup winners and an England captain, two England internationals, a Wales international, Don Nardiello, who played for Coventry, some people might remember. But yeah, a fantastic history. And of course, we're just writing a new chapter now. I won't be writing the second book, I have to tell you, but a live appearance on BBC iPlayer and the Red Button is what dreams are made of, isn't it? Absolutely what dreams are made of.
It certainly is. I mean, telling us that, you know, you're responsible for letting the rest of the world know about all that information as well. I think I need to label you as a non-league legend yourself as well. But as you say, already since that, you know, that Phoenix club restarted, you're now what playing at the highest level. You're second year in the FA Cup. You've got furthest you've ever been in the competition. You're now on the BBC. When in 2013, when that original club sort of hit the wall, and I imagine, you know, if you're like me, being involved with my club, your life suddenly sort of, you know, shatters almost. Did you ever envisage you'd get to this stage?
Tim, quite unbelievably, and I could probably find the press release. The only intention when I called the public meeting was to see if people were interested in forming an adult football club under the name of Darlaston Town, playing anywhere at any level. And unbelievably, more than 100 people attended the meeting. We started to raise funds, as you say. It was too late to qualify for the 2013-2014 season. So we reformed in 2014-15. And since then, it's gone from strength to strength. Obviously, as always, one or two blips along the way. But three promotions in that time. And now we are where we are in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Historically, the old club had a very good record. They got to the fifth qualifying round at one point back in the, you know, the early 1900s. But it's only on going back into or reaching step five that, of course, we became eligible to re-enter the FA Cup, because the step six clubs, I don't know the numbers, but it was...
I think it was only seven this year. Yeah.
So we moved to step five, played the games. Our return to the FA Cup last season ended in a big defeat, a 4-0 defeat at the hands of Tiverton. But this season we've had two very, very good wins against very good teams, Racing Club Warwick, and then a step four team, Mansfield Town.
Yeah, and then that, yeah, they don't make it easy for you either, do they? Because that first game, that extra primary round win over Racing Club Warwick, as you say, was actually the opening game of the season too. How hard was that to gauge before, on the back of your pre-season? Is it just sort of finger in the air and hope everybody's prepared everything correctly?
Not quite. I have to say our manager, Dean Gill, is pretty meticulous. And I travelled with him on occasions to watch football, and we went to watch them in the United Counties League, I think that is. The name of the club they played evades me at this moment. So Dean had seen them, and I think one of his management team had seen them in an earlier pre-season friendly. But this was an actual league game. So you had some idea of fitness levels, formation, players to keep an eye on. Dean is very meticulous in his preparation.
Very meticulous, but he's also previously at Bilston Town, if anybody sort of wants to place him. But he's also a great character, isn't he? He's very honest in his Sunday and Monday post-match reflections. Very, very honest, and I think that's great. It's great for the club as well, and it obviously encourages people to come and want to play for you as well.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. I mean, firstly, even as chairman, I know exactly where I stand. To be fair, Dean and I have a great relationship. So we watch a lot of football together, midweek football usually. And yeah, sort of before he was at Bilston, he was only at Bilston for a short period. He was at Wentzfield and Wolverhampton Casuals. And probably six, seven years down the line are still with him today at Darlaston Town. So how he keeps older players, I've no idea, but he usually has a fairly small squad, and his byword is trust. So once he can trust you as a player to do, you know, what he wants you to do, then he's a very, very loyal man.
Yeah, and you mentioned in that last round, a very impressive 3-0 win over Hensford Town in that preliminary round. To get you to this game on Saturday at local rival Sporting Council, they're a level above. They had a great start to their season at Step 4. Am I right in saying it's literally across town, probably less than 3 miles between the grounds?
I would think it's probably less than two. but yeah, they're just up the road. At the old, many of your listeners may have been to the old Willin Old Town Ground in Noose Lane. That's where it is. Obviously, they've done tremendous work on it in the past few years that they've been at the ground. But yeah, it's literally 3 or 4 minutes by car from our ground to their ground. We know them very well. We play them pretty much every season for the past 4 or 5 seasons in pre-season friendlies. And it's one of the games that I will go to watch them in midweek when there's no other local game on.
So it's going to be one of those games of chess then, is it? I guess you know everything about each other on, off the field itself as well. I see, is it Che Tilt, who's a much seasoned non-leaguer, he scored a 7-minute second-half hat-trick in their last win in the last round. So I'm guessing he won't be allowed too much space, but do the managers know each other well as well?
Yeah, they're on the phone pretty much every day. I think. So Ian Rowe, Rowey, as we all know him, great lad, great guy, puts his heart and soul in. You can always hear him on the touchline. But him and Dean talk probably every other day at worst.
Wow.
And they're talking about players, about their game at the weekend, each other. they're good mates. This will be the first time we've played them competitively quite some time, and certainly in Rowie's era. So we'll put all the pre-season friendlies that we've had over the years to one side and see what they're really like when it comes to competitive action. But no matter what happens, they'll remain great friends, and they'll have a beer, I'm sure, afterwards in the clubhouse.
That probably helps then, doesn't it, with the 12:30 kickoff. It probably helps. There's probably a few more beers that might be sunk amongst local friends. I mean, it must be great for the local area as well, sort of when you're trying to build football clubs, because you're not just, again, like so many non-league clubs that we speak about and speak to, you're not just about the first team, are you? You've got a ladies' team, thriving youth teams and that sort of thing. These are the sort of games that really help them get behind your club.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the publicity that we're receiving from you today, as soon as we published that we were being televised, the feedback on social media has been brilliant. The numbers looking on our social media and website have sort of been, hit the roof. And people who we've never heard of have sent us good luck messages and, that live in all over the country, but originally from Darlaston or the local area, who've said that they'll be watching it, and it'd be really interesting to see our Willinall-based team and a Darlaston-based team. As you said, they're literally 1 mile apart, 2 miles apart at most. It's really got the attention of an awful lot of local people, and indeed spread far and wide.
And so... The finances aren't massive at this level, but you've won a couple of games. you know, by the time those checks come through from the FA, I'm sure everybody within the club would have already spent them five times over. But it's great to have a cup run. But on business terms, I also noticed that the club set up as a community interest company, one of these CICs, meaning effectively that all the profits get ploughed back into the club. It's a fairly new concept in football, but it seems a great idea. And I mean, how does it work?
To be honest, we did that for a reason. When we first reformed. And that was based on some historical dealings at the club that we, shall we say, we didn't want to happen again. Mm-hmm. So community interest company means that, you know, no one owns the club, no one can own the club, no one can take money out of the club without other directors' approval. So although I'm chairman and dog's body, I'm just one of a group of eight who run the club, and as I said, you know, no one can come in with a big wallet and start to dictate terms. That just cannot happen, and that's exactly what we wanted when we first reformed.
And I see as well, you're a big week for the club. You've also got a quiz night planned, I think, next Friday the 8th of September. Is that a regular feature? Because I'd imagine not only have you got lots of other football clubs locally with social facilities that you're competing with, but in between, you know, Wolverhampton and Walsall as well, there's many other establishments. Trying to build a social community with your clubhouse at the hub must be a difficult thing.
Me a bit now, right on the head. Probably our biggest fault, and certainly my biggest fault, is that we haven't opened the clubhouse in midweek, unless we've had functions and hires. We did try it as a social club in the first year or so, but it didn't really take off. And very, very quickly, you start to lose money. And we just weren't in a position at that time to lose money. So this year, we've made it as part of our plan to open the club for various functions for local people. So we're having a race night, all the things that most of the people do. We're even having a psychic night. So
I didn't see that one coming.
The jokes are the best. All in all, it's something we haven't been particularly good at in the past, and we're now making sure that we try and get the clubhouse used more often and involve the local community more and get one or two extra supporters out there as a consequence.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too hard on yourself. You've rebuilt the club back up. You're at this highest level. You're going to be on match of the day at the weekend. Not doing too badly. There's only so many hours in the week, sir. Ambitions this year, of course. Nice FA Cup run. I think you've got a bye in the FA Vase. You've got away to Paget Rangers in the next round. But promotion from Step 5, is that the ultimate aim? I think you were fourth last season.
It's certainly probably Dean's ultimate aim. We finished fourth last season. It was our first in Step 5. We had a great run at it. And until the last probably month or so, we were, you know, in with a very good chance, certainly finishing second. Obviously, with the playoffs this season, a top five slot would put us into a playoff place. Now, that said, we've already seen some excellent teams in this division already. We play Congleton Town on Saturday, and on Monday in the Bank Holiday fixture, and they had two former Premier League and Championship players in their starting lineup, or in their squad, I should say, and they both played. So the competition is great. So if we get anywhere near the playoffs, we'll all be absolutely delighted.
Well, we're absolutely delighted that you were able to join us on the Non-League Football Show this week, Neil. As I say, a non-league legend. I'm putting it out there. Hopefully, we'll see a blue plaque coming going up soon. hopefully we'll get to see you on Match of the Day, or at least relaxing as you watch the game on Saturday. Have a great afternoon. Best of luck in it, and hopefully we'll speak to you again on the Non-League Football Show.
Thank you very much indeed, Tim. Thanks for those words.
So another week in, and time to catch up with more old friends. I'm old, he's a friend. Back over to Non-League Paper Towers, and it's welcome back to the Non-League Show. Editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Tim, we're 5 seconds into my return of this new season. I've already been wounded by you calling me old.
I didn't call you old at all. No, you're just... A bold friend. That's
I
what
feel
it is.
Old.
That's what it is. A bold friend.
Yeah, bold.
Are you fully recovered from? It was a massive weekend of non-league football, wasn't it? That bank holiday.
A huge weekend, and I was sort of saying to someone I was interviewing earlier in the week, there's all this build-up through the summer, talk of pre-season, and suddenly we're through the first month. Most leagues are sort of, well, I know sort of most sort of step forward, not as many, but some leagues are sort of step five, six games in. Teams are already out of the FA Cup, and we have this double header bank holiday weekend, and it's, you know, the season is fully up and running and on its way, and I'm just pleased it's back, and off we go again.
Yeah, we're at that stage as well, aren't we? The weather today, certainly where I am, has been torrential. I think I mentioned to you earlier, I think I saw Noah go past just a minute ago, but it's like... How many coats do I need in the car? Do I need a spare that, in case the proper torrential downpour? I got soaking wet at the game on Saturday. I think about the first minute, I was then sort of wet for the rest of the day. But is it? It's all that rain at the moment where you maybe need a second coat for the second half.
Well, I always think, yeah. I think every year, particularly on the first game, I feel like there's always a massive downpour on the opening day of the season. People say, "Oh, I can't believe it." Supposed to be summer, but I'm sure that always happens, because I always remember a few years ago being at Maidstone and they played Maidenhead, and then started raining so much right at the end of the game that we all had to decamp from the press box, sort of tripping over wires and grabbing computers, and meanwhile, as we sort of ran for cover, a ball flies into the top corner and none of us had seen it, so we had to begging one radio guy to tell us exactly what had happened, because he was the only one sort of undercover who'd actually managed to see the goal go in. But it is that like that. I went to FA Vars game last Friday night, and it is the what do you need to put on? Can you get away with shorts, or do you need to get the jeans back out?
Yeah, and then the problem with jeans, once they get wet, then you're in trouble. Yeah, we've already diversified. We've already gone completely off topic. But these are the
weather report out.
These are the things that people are discussing on the terraces. Things that we're discussing on this show. Last week, when we spoke with Couchy, I said it was still at very early days, but often the bank holiday weekend was the time when the chairman get a little bit twitchy and the committees maybe start to make changes, start whizzing up that managerial merry-go-round. And we've seen that. You reported last weekend on Eastleigh parting ways with Lee Bradbury, and then this week we see Mike Morton's winless start to the season with York City has also seen him depart as well.
Yeah, I think it seems the leash is shorter than ever these days. We've often talked about that in the past, haven't we? And it almost feels like if you don't win a half of football, then the pressure's on. And whether that's a social media thing and the way kind of everyone, you don't have to look at a club's Twitter account when they post a sort of a defeat and all the messages underneath it. It's quite grim, really. Some of the comments, but it does seem to be that if you don't get off to a flying start, then the vultures are circling, and that's obviously been the case. And it's all that work that goes in through the summer, all that planning for the pre-season, and all change and off you go again. But it brings an opportunity for somebody new. It'd be interesting who comes in at both those clubs. Eastleigh last year was just outside the playoffs and would have been looking to kind of sort of speaking to Lee Bradbury in the summer, would have been looking to push into those playoffs. And see, Stuart Donald's back down there now, isn't he? Sort of, I guess we know what sort of their sort of ambitions were in the past under him. So And I think that's the thing, is that people sort of, you know, do like to make the changes as quickly as possible, because you can't afford to lose too much ground. And so your tricky start to the season, it's just not been happening for them. Mike Morton's sort of well respected by for what he's done at the club down there, and sort of difficult circumstances when he kind of took the job on last season as well. But you know, we've all seen the sort of the investment that's been made in the summer in the playing staff and the players that they've brought in, and what their ambitions are. And they've had a difficult start, just hasn't quite happened. But as we say, someone goes, it's an opportunity for somebody else, and there will be plenty of managers queuing up for both those jobs.
Yeah, that's what's interesting though, isn't it? They're bringing players over the summer. You'd imagine a good proportion of those are going to be on contract. So those players, they're not going to be easy to discard, that, you know, and sort of change a whole squad. So any manager that comes in is going to inherit those and going to have to do something with them, try and get something out of them. And whenever you and I speak to managers, whether that's on air or whether that's, asides that we have with them, they're always talking about their 2-year, 3-year, 4-year, 5-year plan. Maybe managers should be coming in and talking about their 2-game or 3-game or 4-game plan.
Yeah, I think so. Managers, Alan Dowson, when he was Hampton manager a few years ago, when he was at Hampton then, obviously at Dartford now, and he's been at Woking since and had success there, but when he was at Hampton, talking about managers, you talk about their 5-year plans, and he's saying, you know, I know if I don't win the next 5 games, then that's it, I'm out anyway. And it does seem to be this kind of 4-5 game kind of period now where, you know, all that planning is well and good, but, you know, if you don't win games of football on a Saturday or a Tuesday night, then it's going to get tricky, unfortunately. That seems the way of the football world. But I've spoken to John McGrath at Mickleover for a piece in Sunday's paper. And it's interesting. He's been there, he's been at the club eight years, and he was saying about how, you know, well, they've started this season on fire. They won 6 out of 6. And he was saying about a few years ago when they almost got relegated, and the chairman stood by him, said that he was his man, and gave him that sort of confidence. And they're sort of 8 years, you know, the plans of putting youth academy into place and all the sort of stuff they've been doing there, is now they've now got 2 young centre-halves playing for them as regulars, and lots of other youth team players who've come in and made their first team debut. So it does take time. So it kind of, you know, different clubs, it's different things. Some want and need instant success, and others, you know, there can be a more patient approach. And I guess it sort of depends on circumstances of where a club is and what it wants or feels its ambitions are of how they kind of approach it.
Circumstances, there's so many different sort of factors that go into it. We spoke to Rob Shedd, the chairman over at Holmer Green last week, ahead of their FA Vars fixture, and yeah, he wasn't very positive. They'd not had a great start to the season. They were playing aside from a level above. They didn't do too well. But one of the things he did point out was that they were having struggles with team selection because they had such a young squad, and they were playing this game on the weekend of the Reading Festival. So some of their players weren't available because of the Reading Festival. That's not something that you'd probably put into your 5-year plan.
No, definitely not. I remember some people didn't come to my wedding because of the Reading Festival. So, you know, it's obviously a popular festival. It's funny, those sort of circumstances now, and maybe modern life's changed, where the young and non-league footballers got lots of things that they need to do, and you know, if you've got to be at Reading Festival, then I guess you've got to be there.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned last week as well about Liam Watson sacking himself at Southport, but as Couchy said, he probably had a plan up his sleeve, Jim Bentley has come in as the boss there now this week. A big appointment and a statement of intention at that club. You just hope that there aren't other factors that, you know, you might have the right people. You know, Liam Watson, Jim Bentley together sounds like a dream team. It's just, does it all gel together?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. You know, Jim obviously does know the level. He's been there. You know, he's been in non-league with Fylde, hasn't he? And obviously he's played it in non-league in his career, and then long-term management at Morecambe. So it's a great opportunity for him because, you know, he'll know the ambition of Southport, what Southport can be. Obviously, at the moment, they've, you know, they've very difficult start of the season. Last season wasn't great either. They've only just got away with relegation narrowly. And obviously that's what sort of Liam said in his when he departed, that, you know, it'd kind of be coming, you know, talk about poor games and, you know, only a few games into the season, poor starts and only a few games into the season. But that was obviously one that ran over from last year, and they felt there was needed a change. And, you know, someone like Jim Bentley will come in and bring that sort of energy and into the club, and, you know, on the club's point of view, I hope that he'll rejuvenate everybody really and get them going again. You know, we'll remember Southport being having success in this division and playing in the division above, and sort of the players that have come through there and sort of things that they've been involved in, cup runs and stuff like that. And some of it under Liam, it would be it's a good club to get going, and Jim will be obviously be trying to do that and getting himself back into management as well.
Mm. And I'm all for clubs being more professional, but maybe more managers need to look at the bigger picture, because an old friend of the show, Dave Diaper, has done pretty much every role at Sholing FC. You know, owner, chairman, toilet cleaner. He's got a great and ever-widening team down there as well around him now. So we can concentrate on football management. But it was great to see that he racked up his 1,200th game as manager for the Southern League outfit last weekend, and doing quite well with it too. It is great that when we talk about these managers, you know, maybe having three or four games here or there, there are managers that are properly there for the long term.
Yeah, Dave's definitely been that. You know, I've sort of interviewed him before, and he's been doing more jobs around the club and breaks off to have a conversation, and been there many, many years. When they, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was one of the Hampshire leagues that they were in when he started there. Yeah. Thornycroft was it, and yep. You know, sort of like rope round the pitch kind of job, and what they've kind of gone on to do, and, you know, in his time, you know, not least going to Wembley and winning the FA Vars, and done it with a lot of players have been there a long time, played that sort of amount of games, you know, played a large number of games themselves for the club, so. I was speaking to him last season as they got into the playoffs, and he was saying, you know, it's time, they were ready now to go to step three, and it was really important that they kind of got there, and obviously they managed to do that through the playoffs last year, and having a go now in the Southern Premier South. And he's definitely, you know, someone who's been there, seen it all, and, you know, had those ups and those downs as well. They had sort of took relegation a couple of times, didn't they, or, you know, backhand down to step five to kind of come up the right way again. And he's people like that are what non-league's built on, really.
Long may he be there for many more years as well. As you say, some of those players have gone on to join him in the coaching staff, so I guess he's probably looking at who's going to follow him through. But it'd be a tough old battle, wouldn't it, to wrestle the manager role from Dave Diaper down at Sholing. I mean, Dave's at step three, but still all the media attention always directs to step one in the National League. No real surprises there. Again, some big games over that bank holiday weekend. Solihull Moors now top of that early table, and it's only them and Altrincham now that are unbeaten in the division, I think.
Yeah, Solihull is kind of, you know, big change in the summer with Neil Hardy leaving and Andy Wynn coming in. Obviously, saw Andy's success at Banbury and what he did there, getting them up to the National League North, and started great this season as well. And, you know, not many people were really kind of predicting that for Solihull to start so well. And, you know, we've seen with Altrincham as well, their recruitment's been brilliant this off season. And, you know, that's a club that's, you know, a real sort of change of the way the club is. You know, it used to be the sort of traditional sort of, you know, kind of last bastion of non-league, but we're kind of, you know, part-time sort of club, and that old traditional name. And they've had a real change in the last few years, where they've transitioned also with Phil Parkinson, who's done a brilliant job since he's gone in there. And, you know, you sort of forget that when he went in, they were, you know, on the back of double relegation. You know, gone down from National League and the North down into Step Three, and he got them up, and then got them up back into the non-league's top flight. And he's gone full time with his assistant Neil Sorvell, and they've now had a playing staff there at their full time, and they had that last year. And you know, it was always going to take time, this process, this sort of big transition, you know, especially at a club like that, you know, that is so sort of been so traditionally sort of part-time sort of football club. So they're now, you know, you're seeing those kind of those rewards, and they've got some exciting young players. You know, they've got Chris Conclarke, they got in, who was on the loan there last year and sort of ripped up, and sort of disappointed they were when he was recalled by Fleetwood, and I think he then was loaned out to Waterford in Ireland for a bit, but they managed to get one on permanent this summer, and got Regan Linney in as well. And I've just signed Ollie Crankshaw from Stockport this week, who was part of a title-winning squad with the Hatters only a couple of years ago as well. So, you know, that's the beauty of non-league football, and, you know, the National League is kind of ever-changing, the pitch is ever-evolving, and, you know, with the, as we've sort of always said in the past, with six clubs able to get into those playoffs, it just opens everything out and gives everybody that sort of chance and belief that they can be there. And those sort of two clubs, you know, after, you know, it's very, very early days, clearly we're not, and just getting into September, but, you know, a good start just makes everything, the outlook for the rest of the season feel so much better at this stage.
Yeah, I think that is it. You know, there's only six games gone, so it is, yeah, very early days. But if you have a bad start, it makes it very difficult to climb back up. One of the interesting, again, discussing with other people this week, it's interesting to see that Hartlepool and Rochdale are both in the mix in that early top part of the table there, suggesting that maybe the profile that the National League's had in the last couple of years, with all the additional media attention from higher up, maybe that's helped clubs in Division 2 and around understand the level that they might be thrust back into after relegation before they get there, so that they're better prepared.
Yeah, definitely. I think the fans understand it as well.
I think that's a big part.
And that's kind of been one of the, you know, that's a club can kind of come down, a manager can say all the right things, but if the fans on the terrace still think they should be turning teams over that they, you know, that they've not heard of, so, you know, in so to speak, you know, it can make it very difficult. And we've all been in those sort of, been to those sort of clubs and those atmospheres where they're not winning, it's not going well, they're playing against a team the fans feel they should be beating, even though, you know, they've often come down having, you know, you've come down because probably there's problems at the club, or but essentially you've not been winning many games of football, when you can come up against a club who's been winning lots of games of football for a few years and is really on the up, and that can be a really sort of difficult thing. So I think the fans are maybe sort of seeing it a bit more now and understanding and realising, you know what they sort of are getting into. I think with Hartlepool, obviously, it's not all that long since they've been in this league, and it was only obviously in COVID times when they got promoted through the playoffs. And they got a manager in John Askey who, again, knows all about non-league, has lived it, breathed it, got out the division with Macclesfield, won the title with Macclesfield, and you know, quite a few of their players have been here as well, and they sort of understand it. Rochdale, it's credit to them. You know, they had absolute on the opening day of the season, which as soon as the fixtures came out, had absolute win written all over it. That's exactly what happened. It was on TV, and absolutely did win one. But they've got some good results. And again, it's because the club's probably come down. They've had sort of a very stable summer. They haven't been all over the place. Jim McNulty, the manager, has, you know, been there, you know, as a player anyway, but sort of kept him on and put that faith in him to be the man to lead it up. And there's a lot to be said for that kind of stability as well.
Yeah, and talking about the fans, I know we've lost Wrexham and Notts County with those big fan bases, but I'm looking through the home attendances so far, so early on, and also in holiday season, so sometimes those crowds sort of go up as we go into the autumn season, but every one of the 24 clubs in the National League is averaging over 1,000 of their home games. But we've got, what, five clubs well in excess of 4,000. Majority of the clubs in there well over 2,000 at their home games. I think it just proves that the National League is attracting fans that may not previously been attracted to the non-league football.
Yeah, I think it, you know, seen that boom over the last couple of years in sort of attendances all through non-league, and, you know, but the size of the clubs in the National League now and the way the sort of the non-league landscape has changed, it is, you know, it is a completely different beast to what it was 20 years ago, even longer than that. And, you know, I remember watching games back then when I was sort of growing up, and it could be, 600-700 people a conference game. There's been a big shift, and there's, fans, I think probably from the, the modern day, the way you can engage so much differently with supporters, and that sort of appetite for live football has always been there as well, and the way that the top end of the game has priced a lot of fans out, and and the product on the offer is good. It's not as cheap as it was to watch National League football as well. You're sort of seeing some of the prices, and they are going right up on them. Again, when I was sort of watching it when I was young, I paid £4 to get in and watch Game of Conference, and they went to like £5. Now, obviously that was a concession, but adults were £6 and £7, so it's now it can be over £20 for some games. So, but I think people see the quality on offer, and the full time element has improved that, and the fact that everybody is full time sort of coaching, and the pitches are so much better, and it all makes for a good brand, and it's good to see that people are getting out and watching their local clubs.
Even in bad times, the fans are still there and turning out in numbers. There was a big crowd at Southend on last Friday night. There were the tennis balls thrown onto the pitch in protest against the ownership saga and their 10-point deduction. There's little doubt that they've got the on the field ability to battle, but it's an unusual season as well. Looking at the table, where all sides are already off the mark with points, so it's going to be a long, hard slog for Southend, I fear. Even if they are able to sort everything off the field, it's going to ask a lot of those fans.
Yeah, it's just been dreadful. It's just a dreadful situation. It's been going on for far too long, basically. This isn't just now. This has been years of frustration for Southend fans. And again, some of them used to see in their club championship not that long ago, and pushing for that kind of that level of football. And I think it's an interesting one, because obviously the fans are so against the hierarchy and are desperate for change, and obviously that's why the protests aren't going to stop. And they may well ramp it up as they need, feel they need to get their voices heard. But you can sense that they are so behind Kev Mayer and his side, and appreciate what they're doing and what they're putting in and what they've sort of been going through themselves, and the sort of uncertainty they've been dealing with. And they've had a decent start to the season results wise. Obviously the points coming off has knocked them right down, but you see that sort of reaction that they had a couple of days after to go out and win, even with the protests interrupting the game. There's a real, you can see that there is a connection between the players and the fans there. And I think they've sort of knocked back an offer for Harry Cardwell, and said they're not selling anybody, and partly because they can't afford to, but because they're so low in numbers with the embargo. But I think the fans appreciate and can see what the players are doing, and the hope that it can get sorted and it can get turned around for the right outcome, and then the players can just concentrate on the pitch. And I'm sure Kev Mayer would be absolutely delighted if he had a press conference where he doesn't have to get asked to talk about off-field issues, and he can just talk about the football. I think that would be quite a novel thing for him down there, because it's just not happened ever since he's been there.
Yeah, and I'd imagine, similarly at Scunthorpe United in the National North this week, they seem to have a successful court hearing securing them at Glanford Park for another season at least, so they can concentrate on their top of the division there, aren't they, at the moment. But that must, as much as the manager will try and shield his players and the players will try and keep themselves away, whatever disruptions going on off the field, it's got to have an impact on the field, or just certainly chip away at your mindset.
I mean, it's just uncertainty, isn't it, for everybody, and all these, all sorts of different aspects of football, whether it is the Scunthorpe situation, that, as you say, they've got a sort of potential issue with the previous owner, Peter Swan, on the ground, and obviously the club are going through that legal process now, and it's been pushed down the road, which, they've sort of can focus on the football for, it's going to be bubbling away in the background, and sort of the owner, David Hilton, kind of, sort of expected it to be this way. So from that point of view, they are at least able to get on with the football and try and get back into the non-league top flight, and sort of, you know, there's nothing they can do to control about it. It's control it from a player's point of view and the fans' point of view. They've just got, you know, the club will be obviously going through their legal process now, and it's a tricky situation.
And these are the stories that we know about as well, because you and I get to speak to chairmen and managers, and there's lots of these little issues going on up and down the country at non-league clubs in every corner of the country.
Yeah, there's this, you sort of, I think we sort of see how many, you know, the breadth and depth of non-league football in this country, and there are 900 odd clubs in the National League system. It's an incredible vast amount of football clubs and football matches and players all, you know, involved in it. And there's always going to be issues. Yes, of course. It'd be boring otherwise.
It would be. And hopefully, this weekend, lots of League and FA Cup action. You'll be writing about all the football stories this weekend in the non-league paper. Anything else we can expect to read in Sunday's issue as it hits our breakfast table? Do people have breakfast at tables anymore? I don't know. They certainly have the non-league paper.
Well, let's hope so. Yes, lots going on. It's quite nice. Sort of a funny one. It's a nice week because the FA Cup of all the Step 3 teams in means you can ring all the Step 3 managers and know you're not going to curse them or jinx their great start. So we've got there's the 400 percenters at Step 3. So there's a piece I said earlier with John McGrath at Michelova. We've spoken to Murtho, who've won 6 out of 6 in the Southern Prem South. Obviously, Michelova in Southern Prem Central. And there's Chatham, who've had a great start, 5 out of 5 in Eastman. Prem, obviously coming up from Step 4 last season, had a great start to life at Step 3, and then also caught up with the management duo Anthony Johnson and Bernard Morley, who've had a flying start at Radcliffe. They've won 6 out of 6. I think they've scored 24 goals or something, the top sort of scorers anyway in the country. And great to sort of speak to those two brilliant characters who we've seen how much the sort of success they've had at Ramsbottom, and then obviously Salford, and went close at Chester, went to Spennymoor, didn't work out. They had to, out there travelling just across to the North East, just too much for them. But they both, speaking to them, you can feel that sort of energy, that passion that they're back in at Radcliffe and loving it and going well at the top of the Northern Prem. So we've spoken to all four of those. I've also spoken to Mitch Walker. It's a nice story, former Aldershot goalkeeper, England C goalkeeper, had a whole year out last year, did his ACL sort of in the April of 2022, and kind of wrote last season off to make sure that he got back fully recovered. It was interesting him sort of talking about, kind of when push came to shove this summer, people wanted to sign him after having an ACL and a meniscus tear, that, and all the rehab that he'd been through, there's kind of that sort of slight hesitation. And he's found a club in Whitehawk who've that faith in him to get back in, and he's enjoying being back between the posts and playing football again, appreciating what it's all about. I've also got a piece with our sort of Bart from our city guru Mark Stillman, who does our results for us as well, and sort of knows everything about particularly about National League South football. There's not a stat that has happened that that beats. Well, normally it's his stat, to be honest. He's hot, whatever. But he's also speaking to Alex Fletcher. A really heartwarming story. Obviously, we know about Alex's issue last season, where he collided with the advertising. What was it, the wall at Twerton Park, and then really sort of, seriously very scary situation. Sort of in hospital and in a coma, and his last week, last Saturday, he got back onto the pitch for the first time since then, which was amazing thing to see. So we've got that in there, and as you say, lots of FA Cup stuff, or the National League North and South, and another busy weekend in the world of non-league football, really.
The multitude of factors that are involved in non-league football, and you're covering them all in Sunday's paper. Matt Badcock, thanks as ever for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend. Speak to you soon.
Thanks, Tim.
And that then is it for this week. Thanks as ever to all of my guests. Good luck to all involved in the FA Cup this weekend. A big thank you to all of you for listening too. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media at Non-League Show. I'm there myself at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And as ever, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you, and goodbye.
Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.